Welcome to the Property Buyer Podcast, where we explore the world of residential and commercial real estate to help you make better decisions about buying, selling, or investing in all types of property. Join me, Rich Harvey, CEO of propertybuyer.com.au and multi-award-winning buyer's advocate. Our podcast features expert interviews, market trends and insights, and practical tips for navigating the complex world of Australian real estate. Whether you're a home buyer, a seasoned property investor, commercial buyer, developer, or simply curious about the property market, our podcast is for you. Join us as we share our knowledge, strategies, and experience and help you achieve your property goals. Well, welcome to our next edition of the Property Buyer Podcast. When a buyer's agent has to go about buying their own home, what are the strategies and tricks they personally use? How do they avoid the emotional roller coaster that so many other buyers experience in the process of buying a home? And when you're seeking a quality home in the tightly held eastern suburbs, it makes the task that much harder. Today, our listeners, you're in for a treat as you get a rare insight into the personal buying journey of one of our own, the director, Munro Donan, buyer's advocate and principal of Property Buyer East, who recently purchased his home in Sydney's East. We'll be looking at the market conditions, the outlook for the year ahead, his negotiation tactics, the search process, and some best tips for aspiring buyers. Munro, welcome. It's great to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Rich. Thanks for inviting me. I'm quite excited to be telling you about my little experience.
Can't wait to hear. So, Munro, as you well know, we have a tradition where we have a thought of the week. I'd love to get your perspective on this quote, which is from Zig Ziglar. And he says, people often say that motivation doesn't last. Well, neither does bathing. That's why we recommend it daily. What do you take from that quote?
Well, Rich, the minute I read it, I started giggling, and then I thought, how do I answer this? Well, I've come up with an answer, believe it or not. Make it a daily habit to self-motivate yourself. Know your why. I think that's really important. Without a goal or roadmap, it's really hard to remain motivated. We bathe daily to remain clean, disease-free, healthy, and the same applies to motivation. It's a daily commitment.
Love it. Love it. It does. Yeah, it wears off. Love it. It's so good. I love Zig Ziglar's stuff. He's very good.
Yeah, it is awesome.
Very good. So look, I've got some questions for you. How did you first get into the whole real estate game? What was your first gig in real estate?
Rich, take me back 38 years to when I was 19 years old. I was at uni and I was studying. I come from a family that have always been involved in real estate, sales and property development. I've always loved the industry. I've worked in residential and commercial real estate. Got my real estate age license at 19 years old when I grew up in South Africa, and then went to work in the UK in the last 24 years in Sydney.
Brilliant, fantastic. So 24 years you've been in the game. Wow.
Oh, Silver anniversary is coming up.
Absolutely, you'll have to reward yourself for that. And tell me more about how you transitioned to becoming a buyer's agent. What made you decide to come onto the good side, as we call it?
Rich, I've worked in various aspects, as you know, of the property industry. I'm very much a person of service and love helping people. I love working for the vendor. Why do I love working for the vendor? When the vendor's paying me, I'm their advocate. I am their advisor. I've worked in project marketing, as you know, and one of the things I found most difficult to get my head around is being paid by a vendor or developer and having to do what they want you to do and putting your hand on your heart and being able to sell something to somebody that you don't believe in. Mm. And as you know, that industry is fraught with issues. Mm. I love it when a client's paying me, I'm their advocate, I'm there to do their job. That, you know, people get frustrated and angry with sales agents. And what they really don't understand is that the sales agents are not working for them. Yep. It's no use getting upset with the sales agent. The sales agent's job is to work for the vendor. There is a better way of doing it, and we know, and that's why we're here, to do it for them. Buyer's agents, you know, understanding the role that a buyer's agent performs and seeing the value they add to a transaction is really important, and I've used a buyer's agent previously myself. And, I am a buyer's agent working in probably the fastest growing segment of the industry. When I moved to Australia back in 1999, I wish I knew somebody like me that could have guided me and showed me the ropes.
Yeah, exactly. It's all good in hindsight. So what you're really saying, it's switching from a vendor focus to the buyer focus. It's really putting the buyer front and center. That's the reason you love being a buyer's advocate, right?
Absolutely. And it's interesting. An agent said to me the other day, he said, Munro, we're not there to work for buyers. Yes, we're there to help them, but our focus is to service our vendor and get new listings.
That's it.
We've got 50 people chasing us. That's your job. You go look after the buyers.
Perfect. So, Munro, you're the principal of Property Buyer East. Tell me, what parts of the eastern suburbs do you cover?
Rich, we cover Watson's Bay to Little Bay, and I suppose everything in between, stretching back to the city.
Fantastic. So there's no part of the east you won't touch?
Absolutely not.
Love it. Okay. And tell me more about, I guess, what brings you real joy, real satisfaction in your role as a buyer's agent? What do you get a kick out of?
Rich, I suppose there are a number of roles, a number of jobs within my role that I love, including, getting to know the clients, getting to understand what doesn't work for them, which is an interesting concept because people ask us very often what we like. And we don't know what we like, but we quickly know what we don't like.
Yeah, yeah.
So if we understand what doesn't work for a client, it's a lot easier to understand what does work for them. Obviously, enjoy inspecting these incredible homes that we see in the eastern suburbs, networking with the agents, finding and securing the properties, always obviously with the best terms and conditions. And probably the best part for me is that Google review. I love it when a client does a review where they identify their pain points and show how we as a buyer's agent manage to help them get around those pain points. And obviously at the end of the day to secure their dream home or investment property. A recent client I worked with, Rich, had been looking for over a year and had been referred to me and come on board. And we bought within 3 weeks an off-market property. They were over the moon and, clients and listeners can go and read our Google reviews and, understand what it is we do for our clients.
That's brilliant. Yeah. I mean, for me too, I find the role very satisfying because we are a dream achiever. Like people have a dream of buying into the East or buying wherever, right? And the reality of that is quite tricky because it's a very tightly held market. It's very competitive. Prices keep going up every year, regardless of interest rates. And for us to be able to actually get some cut through and identify a particular location and then a particular property, and then you actually ring the client after you've been negotiating and say, hey, Bob, Sally, whoever, I've got you the property. And to hear the joy in their voice,
it's amazing.
That's priceless.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
Tell me more about the market conditions in the eastern suburbs. We know it's a very competitive market, it's expensive, it's tightly held. How would you describe the market conditions in Sydney's eastern suburbs during the past year?
The eastern suburbs, Rich, as we know, is an incredibly resilient market and can operate very differently to any markets within Sydney, Australia, and probably within the world. I mean, Sydney's said to be one of the most competitive markets in the world, even more competitive than London and New York. It's an in-demand location with a low supply. You just led on to something that I was going to bring up. It's very aspirational. People want to be here.
Yeah.
Whether they live here or they invest here, it's nice to have a slice of the eastern suburbs. The lifestyle proximity to the beaches and the city are probably one of the biggest draw cards as well. So many people want to live here and not everybody can afford to buy here. So the rent vest concept of them investing in the eastern suburbs and maybe living somewhere else where they can afford is also a big driver for our market. And also considering the last 13 interest rate increases, the market has pretty much stood its ground. And we have seen strong price growth in many of the suburbs, especially property that has a land component, literally from Botany Bay to Watson's Bay, so covering all the eastern suburbs. There's a strong demand from downsizers who are looking for luxury, larger apartments, and this has obviously created a new way for developers looking to capitalize on this demand and the type of product. It's not easy to find the land always, as we know. And keeping in mind that the area is so vast and the prices can vary from anywhere from 1 million to tens of millions, for a prestige home, it's a big market to be covering and a lot of different product and opportunities.
You mentioned something here about land component. I just want to touch on that for a minute because that's one of the key drivers in my view. I mean, we put that into our top 20 criteria for investment property, getting something that's got good land value. Now, what does that mean for apartments? You know, like apartments have a certain amount of land value, but it doesn't necessarily mean apartments are bad investments, does it?
No, well, Rich, I basically look at it in two ways. If you're looking at a high-rise, high-density project, you've got a small piece of land and 300 apartments, you've got a small component of land. What goes up in property is land, not building. If we look at a house or, you know, a smaller walk-up 12 units on the same piece of land, you've got a higher land component. But as you said, it doesn't only work that way. Because premium high-end apartments, which are basically house-size apartments, they can be 200-300 square meters. Talk about Bellevue Hill, Rose Bay, Potts Point, any of those areas, you know, where you've got that high end. Those apartments rich get tens of millions of dollars. So that kind of product, it's a lock up and go, it's an easy option, but it's not the multi high rise developments that are sold mainly to the investors and especially overseas investors.
So what you're saying, I guess, for our listeners to hear is it's got to be something that's more boutique and targeted to a niche market.
So with a point of difference.
Exactly. So we're saying a good quality investment is not a block of 300, but it could be a downsizer that's got six full floor apartments, right?
Absolutely.
Potentially with views, which can actually sell. I mean, I've seen some properties sell in Bellevue Hill for, you know, $6-7 million. They then build five apartments, and each of those apartments will sell for $5, $6, or $7 million each.
Absolutely. And then, you know, there are those iconic high-rise buildings in Sydney, and we all know where they are. You know, the Seidler type buildings, and even though they've got hundreds of apartments, they still get massive prices.
That's
because
right.
They are designer buildings.
Exactly.
In pretty unique locations.
Especially if they're built by someone like Mirvac or one of the top quality
Absolutely.
Developers. Yeah, they're sought after. So we've looked in the past. Let's just put your crystal ball out there and tell me, what do you see the market like in 2024? What are you expecting to see?
Rich, I believe that interest rates have probably peaked. I know I've heard you talking to a number of people, and through our networks and our private bankers, you know, we're hearing the same thing. And I strongly believe that rates will start coming back late in the early Q3. I know some people are saying later, but I mean, if you look at the world economy and where we are and what's going on, I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later. I don't believe there's going to be a crash in our patch at all. However, there may be a leveling off of prices in the high density stock area. As soon as the talk about rates coming down, and it has started already, or not rising anymore, that's really the important part, becomes more widespread, I believe, you know, this does affect people's psyche and the way they start thinking 6 months in advance. And I think it will create an uptick in pricing again as soon as people start feeling more positive and hopeful that they can own their own home or investment property.
You've really touched on a good point, because it comes down to consumer confidence and buyer confidence. And we've seen the interest rate rises have really knocked buyer confidence, because particularly those that, you know, need a mortgage, it's much harder to borrow as much money. Borrowing capacity is down 30 to 35%. So that's really putting a dampener on confidence. And the Melbourne Westpac Institute do their confidence reviews, their reports, and they're sort of, it's bouncing around 80 basis points at the moment. And it's pretty much the same as it was during COVID, actually, the confidence level. It's quite low. But once you start to see talk of interest rate cuts and then them actually happening, you just watch the market re-accelerate. So you're quite right in your, I agree with your view there, that price growth will moderate. I don't think it's going to go backward. I think it just won't be as fast next year. So there's potentially a 6 to 9 month window as we start next year to, you know, go against the herd. Yes, it's going to be expensive to buy if you've got a mortgage, but then you're ahead of the curve going forward. So,
which I believe that the strong demand and low supply will continue, as many of our suburbs in our patch don't have the capacity to substantially increase stock. Buyers with finance approvals, obviously they've been vetted and approved by the bank at a margin already. They've still got capacity to transact, and we're seeing a lot of them out there. There is a big pool of buyers still in the market. Obviously, the strong migration has put pressure on the rental market, and renters who have deposits, or as you call it, the bank of mum and dad, which you always talk about, are becoming buyers in the market. Are we going to see a flood of new listings? Potentially, there may be some investor stock located in the more high density areas. But I see that actually as an opportunity for eastern suburbs buyers to enter the market. It may not be their number one location, but it's a starting point. It's somewhere to enter the market, especially for first home buyers. And, you know, we have attended to a few of those in the last year who appreciate the opportunity to enter this market. And I feel as long as construction costs remain high and supply is constrained, we won't see a major fall in prices, maybe more of a leveling, as you said.
Yeah, well, you're right about construction costs, because that really sets a benchmark for replacement value. So if a house used to cost $1 million to build and prices of, you know, construction costs have gone 30%, that's now 1.3.
And the land cost has gone up, so you can't replace it at the same price.
Exactly, and a lot of people don't want to go down the rebuilding or renovation route because of the unknown cost of doing that and the difficulty in getting trades. So there's another reason it sort of it locks in value. We really appreciate you tuning in to the Property Buyer Podcast, and I hope that you're finding our expert interviews helpful. So that we can keep providing this information and growing our audience, we rely on word of mouth recommendations. If you found this information useful, could I please ask you to share this podcast with your friends, family, and colleagues, and ask them to subscribe to the Property Buyer Podcast. It would be a big help, and we'd be very grateful for your support. Thanks once again for sharing the links. And now, let's get back to the podcast. Yeah, I want to really turn our attention now to your purchase. So you bought a house recently, and if you're willing, I'd really love to you to share a bit more of that story with our audience today. Tell us, what did you buy? What was your budget? What did you end up buying?
Rich, I'd love to share that because I think this is the most important part of our podcast. Because people want to understand that it's real. Mm. We go through these things. We experience what they experience. I've been living in the Inner East in Alexandria for almost 15 years and have seen prices treble in that period in the area. Mm. It's to a large degree the area, you know, has gone through an urban renewal and taken what's been taking place over the last few years and moved away from its semi-industrial to a hip, trendy, cool inner city location. Why I'm looking to move, obviously been there a while, time for a change is always good. And I was looking for a lifestyle sea change. I wanted a good sized home with a garden and pool in the east. I wanted to be 20 to 30 minutes drive from work and friends and family, and was looking for properties in the $3 to $4 million range. I was very specific that I wanted to be in a location that was within 1 kilometer of the beach, was not overcrowded or overdeveloped, and away from high density living. Mm. Looking at a combination of best value for my money, great location, and an inviting community, which is always important, mm. I identified the southeastern beaches. And as you know, I've bought a number of properties for friends yeah. and clients in the area, literally from Maroubra down to Little Bay. And love the open space, the lifestyle these locations offer, and being away from the hustle and bustle.
So you didn't want to be in Bondi or Coogee right near the beach. You didn't want to be in that high density kind of mosh pit, so to speak.
Rich, I find that personally too full on, mm. too busy, especially over the holiday season, which we're coming up to. You've got mm. a lot of tourists. You can never get parking
yeah,
outside your own home.
It was a nightmare, yeah.
I mean, living in Alexandria, mm. inner city, when I have 10 people over, they all scream at me about parking. So at least when I go there, I can have 100 people and they can park wherever they like, perfect. Which is amazing. Yeah. And you know, it's only a 20-minute drive to Bondi, yeah. less than 30 minutes to the city, great bus and road access. And that great community and amenity mm. is really what mm. you know took me to that area. Mm. Mm.
Did you have any fear of that sort of southern part being considered industrial or I mean, some people used to call it the poor man's east. I mean that's an old label. How do you sort of react to that these days?
Well, Rich, what we've seen happen is they went from Bondi to Coogee. When Coogee became expensive, they went to Maroubra. Maroubra has a good and bad mm. side. It's all become the
still
same.
Relative.
And then obviously as it went down, I mean, people that bought in Malabar 10, 20 years ago, people thought they were crazy because there was a prison there.
Yeah.
But you know, as I say, those that are in can't get out. Those that are out don't want to get in. So it's pretty good down there.
Yeah.
And then obviously you've got some of the most beautiful beaches. You've got Little Bay Beach, you've got La Perouse, mm. you've got wave beaches, you've got coastal beaches, you've got every kind of beach you're looking for there. And also beautiful green open space mm. parklands that's never going to be developed. Mm. That is the end of the eastern suburbs. That's it.
It's a bit like a hidden enclave, isn't it? I mean, people don't know about it. Just that little bit further out.
Well, I don't want to tell everybody it's the best kept secret, but I should be telling them because their prices will
It'll
go
get
up.
Out on this podcast, just you wait and see. So how did you go about actually finding the property that you ended up buying?
Rich, it's an interesting story because if I go in back to March this year, I was actually looking for a client in the area. And I went with a team to see a particular property, which was a duplex, one of two, which was 3 years old, built by a builder and his wife, who are an interior decorator. And we were all blown away by the property. We loved the property. We loved the unique points, the light, the abundance of light, north-facing garden, pool, generous living areas, bedrooms, designer finishes. And it was quite interesting because we actually lost the property. Our client just unfortunately didn't have the budget, you know, to get to that level. And almost it became almost as a surprise to me, Rich, because at the time I said to the agent, If the other property, they ever want to sell that, please let me know. I could be interested. Mm. Well, I left it there and thought nothing would ever come of it. Yeah. And 3 months later, I got a call. Lo and behold, and I said, he said to me, "Munro, are you still interested in the property on Lawson Street?" Mm. And I said to him, "Yes, what's the story?" He said, "Look, there's a slight complication. The vendor has a 9-month lease on the property. It's actually a friend of theirs. They've got 4 kids. She's having a baby. And they don't want to break the lease. I suppose that wouldn't work for you." Mm. I said, no, that works for me.
Perfect.
Actually works, really works well, because I don't have to move quickly. Mm. I was able to secure the property. And also, because it had a long settlement, it was quite interesting because he introduced me to the vendor. She's a decorator. She's going to be helping me in the house. She agreed to repaint the interiors. Obviously, with kids living in the house, it's a bit of a mess there at the moment. Redo the carpets, fix up the floors. And within a few days, we were exchanged. And I mean, it's the only negative I've got to tell you is I had to pay stamp duty 3 months later.
Yeah.
Because obviously, so I paid my deposit and my stamp duty. I was able to negotiate my deposit to 5% instead of 10. So I had 5% as a deposit and, you know, almost 5% to pay on the stamp duty.
So it's through your personal connection and just being direct and open and honest with the agent saying, "Hey, I'm interested, let me know." Yeah.
It's, you know, it's all about relationships and the confidence also in a market that's rising pretty strong. What I was able to do is I was able to keep my own home, which is still growing in value and has gone up 10%, literally, when I wanted to sell it a number of months ago to where it's going to sell now. Mm. The new property has gone up and I've only had one mortgage. So I've actually been able to capitalize from the rising price in the term. What I also realized, Rich, is if I look at the building costs of that, and we spoke about building costs, if that property had to come on as a brand new property today and I was going to be buying it, I'd be paying 15 to 20% more.
Yeah. Yeah.
So very happy with
the deal. So it's almost like you've got an option on it, wasn't it?
100%.
You know, you've got a 9-month, yes, it's a delayed settlement, but essentially you've got the benefit. You've paid your 5% deposit. Yes, you paid the stamp duty. But as you say, if it's gone up 10% in value, how good's that?
Yeah. And another interesting fact for our readers as well, because I could have bought the property and settled on it straight away with my own. The reason I didn't do it was because I could have had a capital gains tax issue having two principal places of residence.
Exactly.
So it actually worked out better. And also great that we have, you know, people around us and advisors and lawyers and tax consultants, you know, which were able to help our clients and advise them on that as well.
That's great. Now, I really want to touch on some interesting factors here about your emotions during the process. You know, I want to know how you felt through the whole buying experience, because you do this as a daily job for your clients, but now you're in the hot seat. This is you buying. Was it an emotional roller coaster? How did you keep your emotions in check?
Rich, to say it was an interesting experience is probably an understatement.
Understatement,
Buying for myself. I had to be very grounded, obviously.
We need a video of your face. It's like...
You have to see my face now, absolutely.
His face is like, "I'm going to tell the truth here. That's what we got, guys."
As I said, it was a very grounding experience as a buyer's agent to try not get emotionally involved. Mm. I needed to focus on securing the property and manage my emotions, which I do with my clients. Mm. I have to manage their emotions. Mm. As a buyer, I did pretty well, I would say, you know, during the negotiating process until the day I actually signed the contract and had to pay the deposit. Now, as we know, signing a contract is easy today. You just do it online. It's a DocuSign 123 and it's done. Mm. But then I had to go to the bank because my bank required me to go in. They wouldn't do a transfer online of that amount. Mm. I had to book an appointment. You can't just walk in these days. And I distinctly standing in the branch and my legs started feeling weak and shaking. And the manager, Renee, was there and she came up to me and we chatted. She knows me and she said, "Would you like to sit down? Can I get you a glass of water?" I said, "Renee, I actually would." And it was quite an experience because I remember standing there and having this experience and feeling it. And I actually told the colleagues in the office, when something is personal and has a connection emotionally to you, it's so part of the experience and you actually need to embrace it and manage it. And that's actually when I reiterated to myself the value that a buyer's agent adds to a transaction. Mm. I said to myself, treat yourself as if you were one of Munro's clients. Mm. How would Munro be managing this? Mm. And that's how I controlled myself. Mm. I often, you know, I hold my clients' hands as you do through the whole process. They experience these emotions, which are normal emotions up and down. And it's really good to have a sounding board, a voice of reassurance, a voice of reason, somebody you can talk to, somebody you know that's in control. And basically, at the end of the day, I said to myself, you have it now, you're in control, you need to support yourself the same way as you support your clients and focus on the prize, which is buying the property and winning the deal.
Fantastic. So you're your own self-help guru through this process. Was there any other thing that kind of gave you a bit of confidence to kind of, you know what, I am going to go forward? Was there anything else that kind of just gave you that little impetus to go forward?
Well, I think that really brings me into the next question, you know, that you're talking about, you know, how the confidence of not overpaying. How did I actually decide and make that decision to buy this particular property? And just like I would do for any other client, you know, I looked at this property, compared it to a number of other comparables sales in the area over the last 3 to 6 months. I also looked at what different properties had sold for in the area.
So did you kind of did a full evaluation of the property
yourself? I did a total evaluation.
So you kind of, you did exactly what you did for a client. You looked, you found the property, you went, okay, what are the comparable sales? What did that tell you? How did you do that process?
Okay, so looking at the comparable sales, obviously looked at different properties. Some sold for more, some sold for less, some sold around the same price. But understanding those properties and knowing the area, because I bought multiple properties in the area, and I also did a call around to all the local agents, because I also needed to know what had sold potentially off market that may not be on real estate or domain. And many of them I was aware of, obviously, because I'm doing this on a daily basis. And it was really the important part is, where did I see the value? I must say, and to be honest with you, I was prepared to pay a premium if required. It is my own home, and you know, something that I was prepared to pay a small premium, say 1-3%. And I know that this would come out in the wash over the next 5 to 10 years. But also what's important, value is what, you know, what the home provides to me and my personal needs. The price is what I pay. So there's always that looking at value and price. They're not the same thing.
Exactly. Well, there's a joke about economists, right? You know the joke. They say that the economists know the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Oh, I love it. And the only people that ever get paid to make the wrong, get the wrong results.
Exactly. So, but yeah, everyone has a different utility. I mean, that's a core principle there is that, when you look at a view, someone, you know, buyer A will say, I think it's worth $6 million. Buyer B will say, I think it's worth $8 million. You know, everyone has a different intrinsic value they apply to things, but it is important to do your reference check, as you talk about. It's really important that buyers out there don't just rush headlong when they fall in love with the property and go, I'll pay anything to get it. I mean, that's our job. We protect clients that do that.
Right? But also, you know, the due diligence process as well, getting a building inspection, getting a pest inspection, doing other things, not just looking at the property. And I went through that whole process as I take my clients through it, whether it's a strata report or a building report or whatever it is. You know, I went through exactly the same process. It's understanding the process, following the process, knowing what to do, when to do, and how to do it, which is really how we succeed for our clients.
Exactly. So tell me how you sort of did the negotiation. Was there a particular negotiation strategy that you used once you've done your comparisons to know what you were going to offer on this property?
Rich, as you know, in our industry, strategy will evolve as negotiation goes on. I was in a great position as I knew that my budget would buy the home, and it was more about how far and how comfortable I was to stretch that budget. As it was an off-market property, the agent proposed a price and said to me, Munro, it's not too negotiable. My job was to determine where I saw the value and without overpaying, if it was to secure this home, and also more importantly, Rich, what would be the missed opportunity if I didn't get the property and it went to market or I had to start looking again? What would be the demand for this property and what would this property trade for?
Are you happy to share the numbers with our audience on this property? Like what the agent said it was they wanted and what you ended up buying for this property?
Yeah, the agent said to me, Munro, you're looking around about $3,100,000. The vendor's not movable. Obviously, I did start around about the $3 million mark and I was told that it's not going to happen. We'll take it to market next year. So what I tried to do was look, where can I add value on this? If I'm going to pay $3,100 for the property, why would I do that? And obviously it's got a long settlement on the property. She was prepared to paint it, do the carpets, do the flooring, help me with a number of other things. So I could add value to this. And that's why I was happy to pay at the top end of the range for that.
So I'll give you another example in my own experience too, Munro. So I bought a property many, many years ago in Leichhardt, and it was an off-market property, and I'd actually shown it to a client, and you know, it was a four-bedroom townhouse right near the main community village of Norton Street. Anyway, this particular client, for whatever reason, they didn't want to buy it. And so I didn't want to have any conflict of interest. I said, look, if you're not going to buy it, are you happy if I buy it? And they said, go for it. So again, I did my analysis. You know, the agent was asking $650. This was like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm a buyer's agent. I'll be able to negotiate the price. The agent would not budge. The vendor would not budge on price. Now, again, I did all my comparisons. I knew it was worth at least $650 because it had four bedrooms, which is very unheard of, and double parking.
Oh, wow.
A double lock-up garage, which you never get in the inner west, right? So I knew it was good value. Anyway, so I reluctantly agreed. I thought, oh, I wish I'd done better. Anyway, you know, fast forward 10 years later, it was worth $1.3 million.
Right.
So I think that's a thing that our buyers, or a tip for our audience here, is that sometimes you can penny pinch in the buying phase and actually do yourself a disservice. So the opportunity cost of not proceeding with a particular property that does tick all your boxes as a home buyer or ticks all your boxes as an investor can actually mean you miss out, particularly in a rising market. Even if it's only rising, say, 0.5% a month,
it's on a big number,
which is maybe 6% a year, right? Yep. That's still going to put you back. On $1 million property, that's $60,000, you know?
Yep.
So you could have offered another 20, 30, even up to $60,000 to get into the market, and then you sit, you know? That's interesting. So tell me, what did you learn? Tell me what sort of the lessons you got out of this whole experience.
Rich, what I learned is, and it's exactly what I say to my clients. So it's not learning. I had to reiterate and teach myself and relate this to myself, my own experience. Mm. You know, keep a level head, determine what I was prepared to pay for the property and what point I was prepared to walk away.
Mm.
That's the important part.
Mm.
It was no different to buying for a client. I trusted the process. I followed the process. I knew what to do. I knew when to do it. And more importantly, I knew how to do it if I was to succeed and I wanted to win the prize.
You use a phrase there, which I think I maybe have taught you, is we call trusted the process.
Yeah, and you've always said that to me, trust in the process.
Well, a lot of people don't have a process. This is the thing, right?
Yeah.
Like you, I wish I'd had a buyer's agent helping me when I bought my first couple of properties.
Which we all did.
You know, we made some mistakes. You know, my first property I actually bought was in Alexandria. I bought two, actually, and did quite well out of them.
So.
But again, we have a seven-step process that we take our clients through. And we say to our clients, look, we're going on a journey. We may buy the first property, we may buy the 10th property. We don't know exactly which property, but what we're going to do, we're going to evaluate, we're going to find the right one, and we'll tell you when to walk away and when to proceed. And it's up to the client to really decide that. But you do have to trust that you're going to get a great result through that process.
Totally.
What other sort of recommendations would you give to aspiring buyers looking to get a piece of property in the eastern suburbs? And how should they start the whole search process if they find it overwhelming?
Well, Rich, if we tell them too much, we're going to be out of business. So let's tell them what they need to know, and then they can come talk to us and we can fill in the gaps.
Yeah,
so, I mean, that's interesting because understand the market where you are considering to buy.
Mm.
Research recent sales. Understand why each property sold for the price that it did. Some may look like they sold too cheaply. Others may look like, you know, they probably went for more than you would pay for it.
Mm.
But without actually understanding those properties and having relationships with agents, and I mean, I did this recently for a client where I saw a property in Maroubra that I thought had sold cheaply and it looked pretty good. They touched it up really well. But when I'd spoken to the agent and we discussed the building report and we discussed the condition of the property, it wouldn't have got that price if somebody did their due diligence.
Mm.
You know, and that's the important thing. They look at a coat of paint and, you know, some beautiful furnishings and they think the property is perfect.
Mm.
You've got to do your homework.
Absolutely.
It's really important. And what's difficult for a lot of buyers, and we know it, is they cannot get access to this information. We talk to agents all day long.
Yep.
We hear things they would never hear.
We love those little insights. Yeah.
Mm. Also, knowing the agent and how they guide, knowing the agent and how they negotiate is your key to success. If you haven't dealt with that agent on a number of times and know how they work, you're going to treat them all the same.
Mm.
And all you're going to do is get frustrated, irritated with the agent.
Mm.
You become irritated with the agent, you're burning yourself.
Mm.
You need those relationships there.
Mm.
Finding the property is the easy part, Rich. That's what I always say to a client. Trying to secure it, knowing what to do, when to do, is the hardest part, because by making an offer too early or too late, you could shoot yourself in the foot.
Mm.
And again, reiterating again, keep in mind the agent is there to work for the vendor. They are not your agent, they're the vendor's agent.
Mm. Very good points. I think one of the other things I just mentioned there that as a tip for an aspiring buyer, and we do this with our clients, is we establish a brief. We really sit down with a blank piece of paper and say, what are your needs? What are your wants? What are the target locations? And can you afford this suburb? So getting the brief right, which a lot of buyers don't do. They just go, I've got a pre-approval for 2-3 million, whatever it is, and then just jump on realestate.com and start searching. They don't think about, you know, an actual strategy to sit back and go, what is actually going to satisfy me? And am I wasting my time looking in the wrong areas? So,
well, the biggest thing, you know, we can bring a client, you know, we can add value. And I've seen many times a client wants to buy in Maroubra, say they've got a 3 million budget. You know, can't buy a lot for 3 million. Mm. But what we're able to do is take them two streets away, put them on the border, and they can buy for that.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's really knowing the market, knowing your patch, knowing the surrounding suburbs, that can give the buyer the edge. They see one sale happen at that price and they think they can buy there. Well, they don't know why that property sold at that price.
Are there any common mistakes that you see a lot of buyers make, you know?
Rich, the mistakes and also the advantages of using a buyer's agent, I'm gonna cover, you know, those two items together, because I think it's important we cover that. Yes, I've said the same one a few times. They think the sales agent's working for them. Number one is they don't do their own homework. Being baited by low guides and not understanding the guiding principle. Now, what I'm going to say there is the market will determine what the property trades for, and this can sometimes even surprise the sales agent. Not being ready to strike. Because a property is up for sale by auction doesn't mean it's going to sell at auction. You can be waiting for 2 weeks and the property could be called to immediate negotiation. If you haven't done your due diligence and your homework, you're not going to be ready to strike. You and I have seen this. The agent will call 5 o'clock in the afternoon and say, by 8 o'clock, we're closing it. Put in your offer. Well, if you're not ready, it's a week, the auction's in a week's time.
It's too late.
You're not going to get there.
Exactly.
So striking too early, putting an offer too early, sometimes bidding against yourself, which you may not know you're doing. So you've also got to be careful if you're going to be the first person to put in an offer. Where are you going to put that off? It's always easy when you're chasing somebody else, but be careful when you're chasing yourself. Being a pawn in a bidding game and not trusting what I call the investing in a buyer's agent. Using a buyer's agent is not on a cost. It's an investment. It pays off over time. And for social proof, let our readers read our reviews, because every single client talks about the fees, how they initially felt about fees, and then when we secured the property, where they see the value, and only too happy. I mean, you and I bought an $8.5 million property for a client. We were sitting in her lounge room, and she said, how much do I owe you? And we said, we'll bill you tomorrow. And she said, nonsense. She pulled out her phone, and she said, I'm paying you now. So that's, you know, when a client values what you do for them.
We did get her an exceptional deal, Munro. So.
We did, absolutely.
And we didn't spend all $15 million of their
budget. Oh, yeah, we had 15. We didn't, absolutely. Buyer's agent understand the process, the journey that needs to be followed, what needs to be done, when it needs to be done, and I know I've repeated myself three times, most importantly, how it needs to be done.
Perfect. So just quickly, back to your purchase, do you have any regrets about buying the home that you bought?
Absolutely not.
No regrets?
No. None at all.
And it sounds like you didn't make any of those classic clanger mistakes that you've just described that other people make, right?
Well, no, because we know what to do.
You kept your emotions
absolutely
in check.
Absolutely. I just followed the process and I did what I need to do.
Love it.
Had good conversations with the agents and, you know, that's the important part, good relationships.
Perfect.
And I created a win-win for all parties, I believe.
Fantastic. And finally, before I let you off the hook, tell us maybe the best piece of investment advice that you've ever received.
Okay, you know this one. Don't try and time the markets. It's impossible to pick the top or the bottom. It's very easy to look in the rearview mirror and see what happened. You know, it's time in the markets than rather trying to time the markets when you're investing. And I suppose that's any investment, long-term, not only property. And your home is an investment as well. Don't be scared of market conditions. These should be seen as opportunities. Fortune favors the brave. The best time to buy is when your finances are in order and you're ready to go. Do your research, have the confidence to follow or trust your intuition. And those are really the main points to cover. I think we all understand those and they're pretty simple rules.
Brilliant. Love it, Munro. Really, really sensible advice there. And I've got to say, congrats on buying your property.
Thanks, so Rich. It's thrilled. Very exciting.
So thrilled for you. Can't wait till you move in. I'm looking forward to the housewarming party.
We'll be having a Christmas party there.
Can't
wait. I don't know if I can get all our 30 people in the pool, but we'll make a plan.
Well, we'll have to get a photo for Instagram for that one. But no, really great. You're going to have a great lifestyle. You'll be able to go to the beach every afternoon. Just fantastic.
Yeah,
but,
love it. I mean, I get inspired when you tell me living up on the beach is just being able to get up in the morning, jump on the bicycle, go down for a coffee, go for a walk on. I can pick three beaches.
Yeah.
I've got a great selection. It's very exciting.
You'll love it. I'm looking very fantastic. Forward to it. No, but, and also just want to compliment you on the way in which you do look after your clients. Like it is a very stressful kind of job that you've got, and you're very measured. You're an excellent communicator. The agents really like working with you, which I think is a really key point to success, particularly in the eastern suburbs where it is competitive. There's lots of buyer's agents, there's lots of other buyers out there. So, you know, hats off to you, and you really follow a dedicated process, and it shows in the reviews you get, Munro. So well done.
Thank you, Rich. Appreciate that. So, Munro, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and your family.
Thank you so much. Well, Munro Donan, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we thank you again.
Thanks, Rich.
So thanks again, folks, for being with us on the Property Buyer Podcast. If you've got any questions or have any interest in our services as buyer's agents, please get in touch on our website at propertybuyer.com.au, and we look forward to continuing with another edition very soon. Bye for now. Thanks for being with us on another Property Buyer Podcast. If you have a question you'd like to ask, please click on the SpeakPipe link and we'll answer this during the next episode. If you're looking to buy a residential or commercial property in the near future and would like to get the added advantage of having a buyer's advocate on your side, then please reach out to my team today and send us your inquiry, and we'd be delighted to help. Please visit our website at propertybuyer.com.au, where you can stay updated with all my latest market updates, weekly blogs and live suburb profiles to help you make better property decisions. We look forward to connecting with you again on the next Property Buyer Podcast.